This call is being recorded.
And for the sake of the recording, I'm going to say Suzanne just asked what the significance of the 102 people are. There's so much information that to get it all written down, we'd have on the website probably literally a full 300-page book full of stuff. And so as we move along here, we'd as much as possible, for instance, we'd cover it in a roundtable so that everybody is up to speed as they possibly can be without having to wait for me to write stuff down, which could be, literally another month before I can
answer the question.
Say again.
The question.
The question was, what's the significance of the 102 people? And, some of that was covered in the major update thread on the website. So, Suzanne, had you read that?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
It's a discussion forum on the Super Beings website.
I guess I haven't been. It's in the discussion, then I need to go through those.
It's under major update, and a lot of the latest discussion material has been put in there. And so, to really stay apprised of everything as we go forward, we're either going to have to figure out a different way to organize information, or just be constantly hammering away on everybody that you've got to stay up to speed. But in any event, I was on the phone it may have been February with a superseer that I've known and used for about 18, 19 years, maybe 20 years. And one of my questions was, what was going to be the first mathematical critical mass benchmark number of people that we were going to have to get to boom something, really powerful into the human consciousness grid, or change anything mathematically in the planet, or, whatever, just the number of people it was going to take. And I thought the answer was going to be into the thousands. And she just instantly said 102. And she's the type of person who forgets from one minute to the next what she brings through. And so it didn't come up again until a session involving a question on the solstice gathering that we had. And we had 25, 30 people that were up there. And I could sense the presence of many, many beings, there at the site with us literally the whole time. Including at a given point where they were arranged in almost like tiers, almost like a choir, in a semicircle around the fire up behind some people. And so just almost for fun and in passing, in another session with that same superseer, I said, how many disembodied beings were there with us? And she said, 102. And I said, well, wait a sec, that was the same number you gave, 5 months ago, kind of thing. And she said, really? And so we didn't really pursue it, but it was instantly, I was instantly aware that they are a bunch of beings who are in the process of merging with 102 people that are already.
There's also voodoo in the phrase to feel like a chain.
Say that again.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara, are you talking to us or to somebody in the room with you?
So you said there are 102 disembodied people wanting to merge with 102 of us on the planet?
102 of us involved in the super beings, yeah. Mm-hmm. And You know, and that process is just obviously underway, especially if you're involved in the ABS training, which is ultimately going to be mandatory. And you know, the reason for that is because we are, in fact, visiting a fifth density, an upper suboctave fifth density world, and learning a lot from them and using it for cleansing and all kinds of stuff. And we're meeting with people there, and we've established the protocols and all that kind of thing. And so the 102 are actually going to eventually be doing simultaneous sessions in the awareness bilocation system, to Shupra, that fifth density world. And that's what's going to make that so powerful, is that there are 102 people doing it instead of here, one there, so on and so forth. And I know for a fact, and I mean for a fact, that members of that 102 are going to consciously shift completely out of their body into that world and then back. And there could be instances of the local physical body actually vanishing while it happens.
Oh, God.
That gave me major chills.
Yeah. You know, so, and I know for a fact that's going to happen. We already have members of our core group actually disappearing. And so, you know, what I'm saying is going to happen. And that's why it's just absolutely paramount to get involved in the ABS training and do it as soon as possible, because, you know, it was, for instance, I was talking with Mary the other day, and the conversation sort of revolved around, what are the timelines here, you know? And I said, there is no timeline. There is only 102 people. And so we've had one graduate of the ABS system in 6 months. So what does that tell you? You know, at that rate, we're going to be, you know, we're going to have our 102 people sometime in 2040. You know,
if we've got some more that are close.
Yeah, no, there's actually five or six absolutely stellar students in the advanced targets as we speak. And so our group is going to grow pretty big. As of right now, we really only have 8 or 9 people that can do simultaneous second density world. That's what we're doing. And the latest Merlin Alchemies hugely facilitate the ability to translocate your consciousness into the body that you have on Shupra. And whether or not you have a body established on Shupra ahead of time is almost beside the point, doesn't really matter. But the first time you go there, a body is going to be established, and you'll be absolutely amazed by what you might wind up, you know, to be there. And that is a version of you that, for all intents and purposes, already exists. Mm-hmm. So that was the significance of the 102. And then I just, you know, I happened, as you will see in that thread, it's under the discussions and it's major update. It's a good read all the way through, so you don't have to pick and choose what to read. You'll find, for instance, where we start to address the mathematics of 102 and how it involves the number 14 and the number 7 and a magic square that I made years ago, and how we only find out, how pertinent the mathematics of a given thing are, you know, well into a project. As an example, you know, it's funny how you can just find yourself in the middle of a project you didn't even know you were involved in. And you know, it's just become more and more prevalent. Any questions on any of that or on anything else?
Did you see Cindy Garcia's question about the fire trine planets and their significance? What the focus is about that?
I myself, I would like to know that, because I actually don't know. I haven't had any time at all to explore that. I just haven't. You know, just to make this, the Merlin Alchemies has been an incredible labor. And so I've had no time to explore it. If anybody can, you know, who's in on this call is good with that stuff, maybe you can answer for us.
Yeah, do we have any astrology experts? We've got pretty, like, the barest, I mean, like, all I've found out about astrology is how deep it goes and how much there is to understand about it. I used to think I understood it, and then I get reading about it and realize, like, how I truly need a better education in it. But I do know that wasn't the fire sign planet Jupiter, Venus, and Uranus or something?
Yes.
Involved too.
Yes.
And they were, you know, as you know, that astrology does have a major effect with the alchemy. It puts this energy into the alchemy and influences things. And that was one of those things that Jason just mentioned about how you find out that you're involved in the synchronicity of cosmos. We didn't know that there was a fire trine alignment coming on, and we have Jupiter and we have Venus, so the representation of the yang and yin energies, the male and female energies, and then this other like presence as well. So that just blew us away that those archetypes were lining up right when a really significant alchemy came into being, the Merlin.
Yeah, literally to the day type timing with the last full moon. And that's why in that major update, there's a photo at night with the alchemy out on my magic mirror under the moonlight. And something just occurred to me. You know, of course, Venus represents the feminine and Jupiter the masculine, and then the third planet in it, Uranus. You know, as I was just literally filling a glass of water right now, I was shown that the vegetal, the lapis vegetal, has its correspondence with Uranus, and the yang has its correspondence with Jupiter, and the yin has its correspondence with Venus of the lapis Merlin alchemies. And so in the window that we're, you know, presently benefiting from, obviously the use of these alchemies would be more potent, more auspicious, more effective, as an example. So there's a piece of it. I'm sure there's, you know, according to an astrologer, there's a lot bigger piece. You know, and you just do a fire trine 2015 search on the internet and go through some information that's out there, and some of it's actually you know, rang my bells pretty good. I thought, yeah, that's seeming to be pretty on
point. Yeah, from both a Western and Vedic perspective, they may have like an even another angle, but you'll see. I mean, it's been going on for a couple weeks, but what I read just made a ton of sense in how it was manifesting in my world between like some very intense extremes of realizations. So with the influence of Jupiter and Venus and then the like wild card of Uranus going on.
Right.
To bring in. So.
And, you know, Cindy just mentioned how last night using the fire trine device that I built, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, on the Super Beings, it's under tools, and it's the first link, and says fire trine planets.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks for that, because that was really powerful for me.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it's really powerful, I know. It's funny, it's just like, you know, as I was building it, I could sort of feel what was going on, and then when I finished it and gave it a spin, if you will, I was just, whoa!
Cool.
These bodies they're in there, these heavenly planets.
Yeah, I really like the upgrade with the chakra cooning, too.
Yeah, that one's way potent, too, but I, a little while ago, I used a combo of the vegetal yin and yang with wet down by 7 rays and then allowed to dry. And so I think that after we hang up, I might use that fire trine tool just to see if how much more it is able to express. As a matter of fact, maybe before we finish, we all ought to just go to it and do it together. That's a good idea.
I was just excited to hear that Merlin was with you.
You would like to hear that Merlin was with me?
I was glad to hear. Like, I've always had a thing for him, reading about Arthur and stuff when I was little, you know.
So did you have a question, sir?
No, I was just chiming in. I'm sorry. I was muted the whole time, so I was
kidding. No, I'm just kidding, you know. Well, you know, I mean, I can tell you this on the Merlin Alchemies, the way that it started was I made an inquiry with the superseer that I wanted to look into a process, an alchemical process that would result in a specific outcome. And I won't name that outcome publicly because it's just not smart to do that. But and so, you know, through about half an hour of give and take and back and forth and reaching deep into the libraries and codes and so on and so forth, a recipe came through. And it didn't seem like the type of recipe that would do much of anything. It did involve gold, but I didn't care. I was going to do it anyway, and I set out to do it. And I always know that something has some significance when really crazy things happen while doing it, things that just aren't supposed to happen. And that means that there are beings on the scene that are causing chemistry to change and so on and so forth. Well, this particular one, there's this tremendously violent reaction at the beginning of it where there should not be. And I mean, it's so violent that you actually have to get away from it. And it's possible it's going to make a terrible mess. So you actually have to have, water around to pour on it in case it explodes and whatnot. And through that violent reaction on the other side, there's the only thing going into this process are metals. But after that violent reaction, it's now a ceramic. So all of this starts as a ceramic, and that's incredible to me. And if you've done any, for instance, just general searches for monatomic elements, you'll find out that the periodic chart with its transition metals, the transition elements are able to go to a ceramic state, and that is, you know, literally supposed to be the holy grail in terms of monoatomics. And this stuff, you know, in that first incredibly violent reaction, which is about 4 steps into the process of a total of about 24 to 28 steps, probably with ceramic. Okay, so who's pounding? And so there was a point at which in the downloading of that recipe where, hang on just a sec, I'm going to turn off my air conditioning. Where I sort of just made a sideways comment on, you know, one of the ingredients. And the seer that I was working with said, and it was really even a different voice, said, well, beggars can't be choosers. And I thought, huh, what an interesting comment. And so I asked point blank, who are you? And the voice came back and said, you. so we were talking to, you know, a me, and for all I know, the other me is Merlin or something. I really don't know much to that idea. And so it wasn't too long. Oh, it was just a few minutes after that. I said, I've got a hunch that this process is one of those that has never been written down, that has never been shared, that it's one of the sort of greatest secrets there is in alchemy. And the answer is, yeah, that's true. And I said, and I have a feeling it was, you know, like some of the guys as European alchemists in medieval times and stuff like that were maybe the last of those to perfect it maybe. And the answer came back and said, no, this is actually Merlin's process. And then it wasn't too long after that I happened to be talking to our friend Peter, who some of you know as a superseer, and we were not even on the phone for 2 minutes about other topics. And Peter was just, Merlin, 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 Merlin's everywhere on you. It's in your apartment. He's everywhere. What's going on?
Well, hello, Jason.
Yeah,
it's Mary Beth.
Hi.
I just need to make a comment, if I may. The other you, of course, is Merlin. That's all.
Yeah.
It's just an of course, but, and I also have a question, and I don't know if it's too out of the range of this conversation, but maybe 3 nights ago, I was walking through my living room, completely ordinary state, nothing odd going on, and you know, one of those out of left field, I was just like thrown onto the couch. I mean, just like a blast through the room. And I sat down and had this overwhelming sensation. And the only thing that came up was a feeling that something major, and the only words that came to me were that something major had shifted in the ultimate purpose. Of your work. Is there anything to that you sense? It was 3 nights ago. I just felt this something in the ultimate purpose of everything you're doing had just taken on a new something. I don't know the words for it.
Cherry.
Can you relate to that?
Cherry.
To answer your question, it's of course this alchemy. It's the lapis Merlin alchemies, because what I found out fairly early on, and because I learned quite a bit about some of the inner secrets of alchemy as I was going through the steps of the process, which sometimes require sub steps and so forth. And I, in the middle of it, I started a side project as an example where I was able to use the principles that I had learned about a third the way into these processes. And I took a little bit of pure gold and in two steps had converted it into a ceramic. And it was a ceramic at 2000 degrees in my furnace. And I got it out and it was beautiful pink powder. It should have just been melted metal, but it was a ceramic. And I tasted it and it was beautiful. It was a wonderful alchemy. And then as I started to think about certain kinds of things, because I've been perfectly aware of the philosopher's stone for a long time. And of course it's never been what anybody thinks, because those kinds of answers don't come from anywhere, but you know, ultimately within or from a teacher on a higher level. And as I first started doing some of the furnace work on this alchemy, I realized what I was getting back was actually a stone. Now, I took a picture of some stones just from today. So if you're on the Super Beings, I'll put that link just in the latest activity. So hang on just a sec. Yeah, Jackie, the lapis stone is the Merlin stone.
Wow.
So I think that I just took a picture of the stones that I produced today, which are already on to their next step. And right now I'm going to paste the link into the, you know, latest activity window so that you can just click on it right there. So just reload the home page. And you'll see a post from me that's just a link. You see it?
I'm looking. Oh, latest activity. Okay. Hang on. Not seeing it yet.
Where's the latest activity?
It's on the homepage. It's just the main thing on the page.
Click on Jason's picture. Click on Jason's picture, and you'll come up to latest activity.
Oh, okay.
Oh, or it's just on the homepage under latest activity, and it's the last post by me.
Oh, 21 seconds ago. Okay, hang on. Wow. Wow.
Oh, that looks emerald-like.
Ooh. Beautiful.
Wow.
It looks like emeralds. That's awesome.
Yeah, green emeralds.
Makes me think of the Emerald City.
The emeralds.
And so, you know, I just sort of intuitively stayed open to the ideas of what was being shared and the kinds of memories that I was having, you know, basically rise up out of my DNA. And they didn't, you know, and for instance, if you take the latest, you know, major wave of alchemists would have been late medieval, early Renaissance alchemists. And they were... You know, they didn't have a word for ceramic, as an example. They may have had their own word somewhere or another because they used a lot of clay in their, you know, to make their vessels and stuff like that. And, okay, whoever's talking in the background.
Mary Beth, I think I'm going to mute you, okay?
Sorry, I had just...
I'm sorry. I
just started to really understand that what they were after is what the modern Ormus type people were after, and that's where they thought they were after some sort of philosopher's stone or the white stone, this or that or the other thing. And you know what you're after is a metal that becomes a ceramic. And that's what's happened. And that ceramic can, in fact, have a high enough refinement to become superconductive at room temperature without any sort of a catalyst. But in the human body, as an example, that's a ceramic that the body itself, and saliva especially, right when you touch it to your tongue, catalyzes the superconductivity. And that's why it has to be a ceramic. And so without me even really knowing it, I had been making ceramics to some extent or another all along. I had just never done it through a process-oriented system that is step-by-step that does an actual conversion of a metal into a ceramic right before my eyes. And so once... that idea, to answer your question, Mary Beth, started to really sink in. Things like the idea that if, as an example, of the 102 people that we need together to come together for this critical mass, you know, they could literally leave the super beings and go somewhere else in the world entirely and not even be in touch. But if they're using the alchemy, we're still in touch. So long as we're using the alchemy, we will always be a network, no matter what. And that network can't be dissolved, won't go away, so on and so forth. And so I think that maybe 2-3 nights ago, which you know was also a pretty potent stretch for me, had mostly to do with the fact that there was a sort of official momentum thrown at it, at everything that we're doing by, you know, the 102 themselves and all the many beings that are even in support of them. And so, you know, that's it. It's just this alchemy, what we're doing, and you know, signposts that blast through a ton of information.
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yeah, who's this?
Yeah, this is Sean. Okay. With the new Merlin, my question is mainly with polarity. I read the write-up, and I kind of get that it's a progression. You can use it as a progression through the Blue Emerald. So you're going through Blue Emerald, you're to Phasics, and then progress this into the first Merlin. But my question is, when you get down to the yin and the yang, and the question's about polarity, can you use that to stabilize polarity? If you were more in the female, would you, for instance, use one for balanced polarity to the middle? Or with the condensation of yin and yang and male and female, is there going to be an aspect of changing polarity to one or the other?
Well, I wouldn't say it'd be so much switching polarity or emphasizing a polarity, since these really are about having the vegetal, the yang, and the yin all work together to make that three-pronged spiral, if you will. But I know for a fact that, as an example, let's say that I'm going into a deposition for my mom, which is in fact going to happen next August. Well, on August 28th, where it's going to be a deposition for an arbitration session to decide how much she's going to be awarded in a fairly big lawsuit she's involved in. And so I'm going to be deposed. And if, for instance, that morning, if I'm feeling a little bit soft and too quiet and too gentle, I'm going to use some of the yang so that I've got the fire and the force and, you know, the power, you know, going into that deposition. If I'm needing to be more soft and intuitive and creative and artistic and things like that, I'm going to use the yin. But I think Mary can throw in an interesting piece here about her own experience. Care to share, Mary?
Regarding the, like, what aspect?
Yeah, the first aspect that recently seized you.
Well, one of the things that I first noticed about it, and there were two batches, and so I felt like they were slightly different, but probably some of you may experience this too. But I took some, and it was like I think it was the male alchemy had this, and it was like not a direct experience, because the alchemy is never like something for me where I just, you know, dab my finger and I take it, and it's like valerian root where you have an immediate reaction of like cause and effect. Sometimes I ingest the alchemy just having it in my presence, or I experience the dose before I even do it or something. So this was like a later experience where like I took some the night before, and then the next day I had this experience, and it was like all of a sudden I felt this like immensely powerful warrior energy kind of take over my entire being, and I just felt like I was almost like aggressive in a way that wasn't violent. Like I just wanted to tear the mask off of someone, or, you know, there was this sort of different strength that was coming on that I didn't expect, and it's not really characteristic in my personality, or maybe it is now, but maybe we merged or something. But usually I'm much more like passive and not like going to like front anyone or anything like that. And this was so powerful that I was just walking around the house with all this like excessive energy, and I felt like, you know, I could intimidate the scariest cop on earth with my vibe right now, where I felt. And then after that, I also experienced with the yin and the feminine energy, and that kind of just calmed down and smoothed out. It went to this like a crescendo, and then it just mellowed out. And then with the yin, that was like there was a, I would say like a softening or a heart opening, where I felt just like in touch with more like maternal energy, more nourishing, caring, heart opening type energy was going on with the feminine yin. And there's so much more to it. Like, I'm not doing a really good enough job of explaining all the subtle textures that go on, because it's ongoing. Like, it changes over the days, and it deepens, and it takes you in its little valleys and eddies and branches of playing out in your life experience. But that was definitely one of the things that it showed me. And it also does have something to do with polarity, and it has something to do with courage, and it has something to do about walking your walk, like, especially when you're like being pushed down to the wire. And what else does it do? When I'm finished with it, are we ever really finished with things? I would like to write about it, but still kind of feel like I'm in the midst of experiencing it. Does that answer your question? Did I scratch the referral thing you were referring to?
Please do. What I was like referring to is, for instance, coming back from like the solstice, and was just so ethereal, and which is, you know, subconscious, not necessarily meaning female per se, but more subconsciously related, kind of just out and, you know, kind of out of balance that way, but in a good way. I was just wondering if it could be used as a tool that way. Like,
well, sure it can, you know, especially if it's by your intent. But, you know, it's the kind of thing, for instance, where, you know, a lot of people think that it's about balancing polarity. But, you know, it's, for instance, if in these three alchemies, if what, you know, what we're talking about is a you know, triumvirate of a trinity of products, then, you know, what are we really talking about? Balance. Let's say that you are a more masculine oriented personality, whether you're a man or not, right? And and you tend to have the fire and the force and so on and so forth. Well, that fire and force isn't something that you so much subjugate as much as you just, you know, bring forward and give more power to the inner feminine, if you will. And so, you know, it's not, for instance, about quashing one in favor of the other, but just bringing another of them more to life. And
right.
Doesn't really need to be, you know, any reference to, let's say, a permanent condition, because, you know, we're in a sea of ever-changing energy, and so we just have to, our whole trick is to be in balance, you know, literally from one day to the next on, you know, what we are. Some days we're feeling aggressive when we actually need to be quiet and creative. You know what I mean? And so...
Yeah. Well, I'd like to hear her answer, by the way. I didn't mean to cut you off with more questions.
Oh, I think that was it. Did we answer your question?
I was, you know, all the alchemies are going to
do precisely for you. Like, don't think that, like, because of what it did for me, that's its only capability. When you come back from, like, when we get together, even in these phone calls, like, I feel different after being around you guys in these phone calls. But, like, when we get in person, it just, you know, there's explosive growth, and it's like the rest of us has to kind of catch up with the expansion going on. And that just happens. It just happens over the course of several months and weeks, or maybe sooner. I would definitely think alchemy would be good for anybody that's experiencing rapid growth and they feel like they want to sort of re-ground or find their center amidst all of that intensity.
Well, I guess the reason I asked the question was really, I guess I should come clean with the whole story, is I just want to experiment with that. Like I try to stay in a constant balance, so go a little one way. So that's why I was wondering if it was even, I think it'd be kind of cool to experiment with that polarity and just try to stay neutral at all times.
Follow your intuition on that.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
And do experiment, you know. That's what we invite more than anything, because that's the only thing that can expand our, you know, perception of what we're dealing with. Right now we have a very, very narrow perception of the full range of capability of these alchemies. And so it's up to all of us to discover their full range and report about it and do it in the forums and in these calls and so on and so forth. That's what we're doing here together, you know.
Exactly. The sharing is really, it's helpful because it helps people understand their experiences, which may mirror or have, you know, some similarities. And then it, you know, prepares people for when they do experience those things. And it's just wonderful.
Jason, I have a question.
Curiosity is key. Everything we do.
Somebody had a question?
Yeah. Out of your 5 new alchemies, which one's your favorite? And which one's most likely to help me learn how to fly and fight crime?
if I answer that question, the other ones are going to gang up on me, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like they're the children on the stairs and somebody has just asked at a dinner party, so which of your kids is your favorite?
All right, you love them all equally, I get it.
Yeah. But it's interesting to me how subtle the most powerful alchemy is. It's like I've recently used the sentence, the higher the level of the alchemy, the less you're going to detect it. And it's not necessarily about, you know, some sort of a rush or a change or something, even though, you know, these do that to me. I was really blown away the other day when I used the Yang alchemy and what it did to me. I almost had to hang up the phone. But it's what has clearly happened over the course of about the last 10 to 14 days is that I am just remembering more. I'm seeing more. I'm understanding more. This idea of ascension has never been, real, if you will. It is, in fact, about dissension. That's what has always been true, about, you know, spirit descending more and more into form. And to do that, of course, there are certain kinds of polarities and frequencies involved with, you know, this third density as an example. And it's not that easy to get into unless you are, born into it. And that's why, for instance, so many great beings, if you will, take on bodies, and everybody on this call is one of those great beings. so that you can be, for instance, you know, behind enemy lines, if you will, you know, so that you're an infiltrator, so that you're in a body in the carbon and electromagnetic spectrum that is this density. And so for me, that's all it's been. It's been an increase in grace, an increasing understanding in me that you can look at things like love and unity, and you can eliminate one or those, you know, one of those two words and still have the same thing. And I can tell you in no uncertain terms whatsoever that you're not going to levitate until you are 100% unified within, total unity. And and you know, that's due in part, for instance, the way that our lineage works, and this includes you, is that, you know, there are some bad quote unquote beings out there that are super entities, pan-dimensional, can manifest things, but our lineage is, you know, do no damage. And so if you're going to be able to modify space-time according to your will, then you by God better not be doing damage. And so the idea of having your of working every single minute of every single day to keep your thoughts where they need to be, that's becoming easier. And that's with the use of the alchemy. So far, I could tell you my favorite combo has been the vegetal, the yang and the yin, all together, mixed together as a powder with a little bit of seven rays on top of it, mixed into it, makes it wet, and drying that, because there is a hugely unifying effect. And I wear the lapis lazulis around my neck, but I know that it hasn't even begun to do, you know, more than a percent or two of what it's capable of once the other three have done what they can do and what they're supposed to do.
Jason, this is Elizabeth. This is Elizabeth in Hawaii. Let me ask a question in a slightly different way. And that is, do you feel that different people will benefit more from one or the other? So rather than saying what's your favorite, what would benefit me or this other caller, our other friend on the line?
Well, you know, that's a really good question too. And as I say, we really, so far, we know very little about it. But this is a question that I can at least kind of answer, okay? And that's that if there is anything that is going to make adjustments that to you that are, you know, your own idiosyncratic traits and the things that you need specifically that are unique to you, they're handled by that vegetal one. And so that one's going to bring, you know, almost everybody into a very near resonance, so that it's almost like saying that that's a group that just needs very little more work, because that's how much, you know, work that they've done using the alchemies and whatever else. And then, I think that by and large is going to be, you know, large, really responsible for how much we're going to be in resonant phase with each other, no matter where we are, no matter what we're doing, and so on and so forth.
Is that kind of like our carrier frequency of our group or something, kind of? Metaphorically?
Yeah, it's like that. You know, one of the biggest problems that's ever, you know, that's been an Earth problem for a long time, because believe it or not, Earth is kind of overdue for the end of the 3D part of the story, is that the best way to keep, well, you know what it is, it's conquer and divide. Or what is it? Divide and conquer. Right, is divide and conquer. There has never been enough people to get on the same page to decide where Earth is supposed to go to begin with. And so as a planet, it's never had a plan. All it's had is a million different agendas. And that's why it's never been able to accomplish what it needed to accomplish, you know, from the get-go. Because in these evolutionary experiments, what usually happens is that a planet wakes up enough so that the entire planet is on the same page with what they need to do. You know, for instance, to move to a higher density when it's time to do that. And so even among us, the right now we've got, it looks like it's probably about 38, 39 callers. You know, it's really tough in modern times with everybody doing everything everybody has to do just to, you know, to get through any given day. It's hard to get on the same page where we can be in resonant phase, unless, as an example, we're in on a call like this one, you know, because this call is automatically going to get us, you know, half into phase with each other. But the alchemy gets us totally in phase with each other, even if we're not aware of it. And I think that vegetal is going to do that more than anything. And it really just clear away anything that stands between you and being in phase with the group. You know, as everybody here knows, you cannot say enough of what it is to have group power going on to work for every individual in it.
So, Jason, what I'm feeling from other people, and I can feel this in myself as well, is that there is some, there's a thread here that's gone for many, many lifetimes that still is holding us back. And can you see what I'm seeing there? Can you feel that? It's not exactly just fear. Like, I don't mean we have to go digging up old fears. That's not it. It's like something else, that some memory that keeps coming up for us, and it seems like it just holds back the whole business.
I don't really.
We don't want the movie to be over, I think, or something. Kind
well, it's, you know, I mean, if there's been a delay in things, it's literally been, you know, the forces that want to control have been able to keep people from getting on the same page, as an example. But if as an example, you were to back out of the perspective and give yourself a much larger perspective, even if you've got a fifth density being that says, hey, you guys are, you know, you're overdue there on Earth. From the larger perspective, you know, another being would probably say that's ridiculous because it's impossible for anything to be imperfect. And from the largest perspective, that's actually absolutely true. But, you know, is just another example about the sheer wildness of the kind of thing that we're involved with on any world, on any level. It doesn't even matter. You know, the Earth was, in fact, completely destroyed in 1972. And a bunch of us on a much higher level of being, I'm not saying Jason was doing it, I'm just saying something that Jason is a part of, actually installed a simulation in 1972, and that was the time at which we literally installed the Maya and a bunch of other things just to remind ourselves of what 2012 was all about. And so dreamlike is this that we are, you know, literally in this to try to remind all our brothers and sisters that they're actually dreaming. Just like the movie Inception was trying to say, you know, that was what it was saying when, you know, when Cobb's, is his name Cobb? What was his name?
Not Cobb.
Cobb. You know, when Cobb's wife shouted in his face, because you don't know you're dreaming, you know. And that's what this really is about. But, you know, insofar as being held back, I don't know that held back is quite right so much as just the memory. You're talking about a memory, correct? Isn't it like
I
a memory?
So.
Isn't it just kind of swim into your attention and tease you a little bit and then swim back away? I think that's what's happening to everybody, right?
Yeah,
and
I agree.
And so we're about to seize hold of that memory as a group, whether or not it, you know, everybody remembers it simultaneously, probably not. But, you know, over the course of the next year or so, a lot of people in this group are going to be recovering those memories. And we're going to be having reports of people saying, oh, by the way, I manifested a lump of gold today. You know, that kind of stuff is going to be going on.
Well, I think that's one way that you can perceive this as well, as far as memory recovery, is you can take a look at the myths and the fables. Like, for instance, Hans, what is it? Is it Hans and you know, going into the forest and leaving a trail of breadcrumbs so that, you know, when you find the gingerbread house and you're trapped in the illusion, you know, literally imprisoned in the middle of the forest, that you will remember that, you know, you did leave yourself clues. Like, there is a way out of the illusion, right? And we don't, I mean, we are as beings on the other side of this experiment, right? We're meticulous. You know, we're meticulous in the way that we leave things to help ourselves, because we know that, you know, it's quote unquote difficult to be here, and you know that we're gonna have, you know, just by the very nature of our own curiosity, we're going to try to piece things together and to make a story, make it make sense, right? So I mean, if there's anything I would say, you know, if there's anything that perhaps that you're sensing, is that, you know, a need to recover the fragments through space time that you consciously organize as past lives, like, you know, that you're wanting to recover those fragments so that way that you can be in full possession of a kind of perception that is so much larger than just one quote-unquote lifetime, right? It spans throughout the entire Earth experience that you've had here, of which this current incarnation is only a part of.
Yeah.
Thank you for describing it like that. That felt really good. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is Dale. I don't know if you guys have had the same experience. I've felt a lot like I always wonder why I was neutral like on all these hot topics, or I always felt like this whole middle path thing. Like I always felt I had no political view, or I could take either side. I could argue with whoever I wanted at will, et cetera.
Yeah.
That's all I had to say. So a lot of middle path resonates with me, you know, because everyone's looking for an answer, and you're like, it's all, you know, you need some perspective before you can get any kind of solution. That's all I have.
I was going to say, I'm definitely feeling that there's a tighter connection between many of us, like, already, that the, like, bonds. And it doesn't matter, like, if we're in proximity or not, like, it's there. So, like, that we feel each other, and so that we can, you know, kind of tune into each other and be in resonance, as they say, or kind of know what each other's feeling, kind of telepathy sort of things are going on. And so all I know is I just see those things increasing.
Well, let me say this. I mean, let's be honest with one another here, right? I mean, we all know that we're looking for something that traditional lives and perspectives simply cannot satisfy, a deeper yearning, right? Well, congratulations, you found it. This is the real deal, you know? I mean, we're not asking you to do anything here that you yourself wouldn't expect if you hadn't found something that was true. Something that actually will help you understand and recall and bring back to the fore, you know, your exact purpose of being here, which has nothing to do with being human. You're going to live your human lives. You know, you're going to go about washing your dishes and going to work and being stuck in traffic and, you know, doing all those things that's about the Earth experience, but that's not really what you're here to do. So that doesn't take away from being human, right? It doesn't take away from that at all, but there's something deeper, right? Which is why you're on this call, right? So, I mean, this is it, folks. Welcome to the party. I mean, this is the reason why we call it the round table. You're all equals here, but we expect you what you would only expect of yourself, and that is to be an equal member of this group, to step up into the ABS system, to take the alchemies, and to at least be open and empty and receptive to the idea of restraint. You don't have to agree with it because it's not really about that, right? This is something that goes way, way, way beyond just a single lifetime, way, way beyond just right here and right now. This is a huge, huge endeavor, a huge project of which you are among the select few.
I think I'd like to add a little bit to what you were just saying, just in reference to the alchemy. But as an example here in Western Western cultures, you all know, we don't have time to sit down and meditate for 4 hours a day and, you know, and enter into samadhi yoga with the supreme deity. You know what I mean? We're driving around, we're working, we're doing what we do in Western culture. And so it isn't that easy an enterprise on a conscious level, for instance, for a group of people to get into and remain in resonance with each other. That again is what the alchemy is about. In addition, the alchemy, if you hooked yourself up to an EEG, you would find out that the minute that you have used it, you're going to drop into a low alpha or even high theta state. And so it's as though in the busy, bustling Western culture and how hard it is to keep up with life itself and get the bills paid, we still get to be in the state of mind as your average 5 hour a day meditating guru in Northern India.
Jason, how often would you recommend taking the new alchemies?
Oh, you know, on this one, I'm going to have no recommendations at all, other than, you know, on maybe some clever little ways to use it and things, because once again, this is so totally about personal intuition. You know, if there are only four or five of us, then we can intuitively address it. You know what I mean? And it will change. It's like, well, in week one of September, you're going to have to use it once, but in week two, you're going to have to use it 2.2 times. You know, it's that dynamic, and the sea of information that we live in is that dynamic and changeable, and we are affected by it from 1 minute to the next.
I do want people to start using their own inner guidance without using it. And I completely appreciate that people want to be circumspect and like there's an air of humility and like I'm new to this and I just don't want to do the wrong thing and I don't want to overdo it. But if in the same way that you, you know, you're, you know, before you make a meal and you're like, how am I feeling and what's my body need in that same sort of way. I mean, we use our intuition all the time. We just maybe don't even think about it. It's just sort of an inner knowing. And for those of you that are already in ABS training, you can just pick up the alchemy, hold it in your hand and say, hey, am I to take you today? And the way it works for me is if I get like a really, you know, a glowy kind of green light feeling, and I go for it. Or sometimes I'll hover my hand over the alchemy. And if I'm not, you know, drawn to a particular one, if I get kind of like a sort of like a no feeling, it's just sort of like it's not that magnetic pull isn't there. But it might be there tomorrow. You know, so I just sort of listen to that and go with that. And it might be I take it twice in a day, or I might go 3 days without even thinking about it. So because the dose that I took before is still unfolding. So just, you know, use that, feel it, develop a relationship with these entities, these intelligences, and kind of, you know, have a conversation on the system, like, and if you don't, you know.
Yeah, I don't think the scientific method is the best approach to alchemy doses.
Right. Definitely, it makes sense why people ask me.
It's also one of those kinds of things where, for instance, you know, I could get a question from somebody that says, should I have used the alchemy today? And my question would be, did you?
No. Yes.
Then you know the answer to your question.
Yeah, I play it that way.
Yeah, there's no shoulds in our book.
It either happens or it does not.
Yeah, it pops in my head, or I don't, like you said, I forget that it's around.
Winnie had a question up in the chat.
Who's got the frog?
So we're both asleep.
That's awesome.
Like the swan. Swamp Man. Someone busted. They fell asleep.
All right, Shell.
I'm having a feeling he's riding a unicorn somewhere.
Everybody's got to stop laughing for a minute. Let's be quiet so we can determine who it is.
It's Sarah. This is precious.
Winnie, will you write something about what you meant about 1972? That is written someplace, Jackie. But it's pretty simple. I'll answer that question, and then we'll see if I can understand what Winnie's question actually means. I don't know what Winnie's question means. So in 1972, especially for those of you who... Okay, so somebody is talking in the background here to somebody else. Mute yourself. If you're old enough to have been aware of the news, for instance, in 1972, there was a fairly alarming, news item that the sun had sent off a coronal mass ejection that could actually, cause power outages and do some damage. But the truth is that the scientists themselves were so paranoid that they were finding shelter. They were going below ground. They were finding bomb shelters, things like that, because they figured that the surface was going to be incinerated. And the measurement of the solar wind that was on its way here measured anywhere between, I think, 400,000 miles an hour, a million miles an hour, something like that. And maybe it was even per minute. And so the numbers were just as startling as they could possibly be. And then somehow it just didn't happen. And it was found to be very confusing and thought of in that respect. And I remember it, but I came across something years and years later that was just such an obscure account of, like a channeling or something, and it was discussing it, and it just jangled my bell so much that I had to look into it, and so I did, and I asked one of our superseers if it happened, and what was being described as happening is that you know how in quantum mechanics you have the many worlds interpretation of the quantum theory, where, for instance, if you are asked a question such as, hey, can you meet me for lunch? And there's going to be one of three answers to that question, and that's no, I can't, or yes, I can, or no, I won't, basically. And in effect, all three decisions take place, but you're only conscious of the one that you carry out while another you carries out the whatever the ramifications are of the other decision. And so in that respect, there are over 100, I think there's something like maybe 104 or 105 versions of third density Earth, all on different trajectories. And those are mean versions, because there are lesser versions that are just fleeting dreamlike things that come and go, as an example. And so, like maybe you heard about that guy that landed in Tokyo, flying from a country. When he showed his airport or his passport at the airport in Tokyo, the country didn't even exist. And he said, well, sure it does. It's existed for 1,000 years, right? Between France and Spain. Where's your map? I'll show you where I'm from. And they look at a map and his country's not there. And so suddenly he's pretty dang disturbed. And And so are the, you know, the officials, and then eventually the State Department, the Japanese version of the State Department showed up. And, you know, what are they supposed to do? You know, the guy is bearing a passport that, by the way, has many Tokyo stamps in it. And, you know, and then they wind up putting him up in a hotel room that was on like the 40th floor, and they posted a guard outside. And when it was time to try and dispose of this difficult situation in the morning, they knocked on the door, nobody answered. They gained entry and went in, and it was as though nobody had ever even been there. And so and he was never found. And you know, that's, you didn't find that story. That's a fun one. And you guys have probably heard about that woman in Spain, I think it is, who also just started talking about, hey, I'm stuck in the wrong world here. Can anybody help me with this? And so I looked into it, and I asked a superseer, I said, did that happen? And the superseer said, yeah, it happened. And you and some of your friends were the ones that installed the simulation. And that came as, you know, like some pretty astounding information just on the spot. And then I looked into it more and more. And what we did is we installed a simulation that had all of the conditions necessary for the continuity of the world of the dream as it was proceeding at that time. And then it just picked up and just kept going with it. So it was a total splice simulation that, you know, it was really just a splice that brought into the global awareness a whole bunch of things that were not there literally 2 days before, that sort of thing. And, you know, such as the idea of December 21st, 2012. Believe it or not, it didn't really actually exist prior to 1972, but you wouldn't know that because the only memory you have is the one that is contextually installed now. And we gave ourselves 40 years from 72 to 2012 as an incubation period. And we set it up so that we had all of the, you know, the necessary information, such as that we're moving into another, you know, higher energy place in space, that it fairly closely matches the impact from the precession of the equinoxes. And so we used December 21st, 2012 as sort of, okay, boom, now the fuse is lit. That was the fuse lighting ceremony, December 21st, 2012. And, so that's pretty much, you know, what happened. Now, things like that can happen on a individual scale, as an example. So, for instance, my mother was driving along out in an area where we own some property, and she was getting drowsy, and there was a stop sign ahead, and you either have to go left or right. You can't go straight, or you're going to wind up in a river. And she kind of startled herself awake at 60 miles an hour about where the stop sign was. And then suddenly she was repositioned, heading the other direction. Vehicle and all, it was a splice. Something slipped in, did a splice for her and you know, set her off on, you know, on the road, on the way, on the right way. And that's really the same thing, only on a global scale.
So when is the treasure hunting starting? I just remember reading on the old site that we were going to do some treasure hunting, that you were starting some... you're going to find some treasure soon or in the future.
Well, you know, we've actually found it, but you know, you'd have to become the president of the world in order to go get it. You know, a part of the Iraq war, as an example, was in fact to use war to go plunder treasure. Did you know that?
Yes.
So, you know, but I've working on some things that are pretty friggin' powerful in that respect. But maybe there will be. Weirdly enough, you know, one of the superseers, we were just one day talking along, just a chit chat, basically, and we got on anti-gravity. And he said, you know, I've had this vision of you with your treasure hunting stuff on many occasions. And he says, it's actually happening even right now, where you are floating along in some sort of anti-gravity craft. And you're just above the surface of the water. It's in the Caribbean, and you are pulling gold from all the sunken Spanish ships right up into the bottom of the craft using that same anti-gravity technology.
And I was riding shotgun.
And I said, well, I said, you mean me, Jason, is doing this? And he says, yeah, it's you.
That's a good visual.
And I said, well, you know, okay, you know, that's fine with me. I don't know how it, you know, comports with everything that we're presently doing, but, you know, okay. Just to kind of bring everybody up to speed, I've got about $15,000 worth of really high-end treasure hunting equipment in my possession, and I've actually done it as a hobby.
Specifically gold you hunt, or what else do you hunt?
Well, the detection equipment is, will hunt for gold, but it can't be refined. It can't be natural. It has to be refined. And it has to have been buried for 200 years, or you have to have an artificial burial where you deliberately use chemicals to age the soil in its reaction with the treasure. And those reactions, you know, as age is actually what creates a field, and what my stuff does is detect those fields.
Nice.
Yeah, supposedly there's treasure in Utah and certain canyons, and they say there's treasure. And I mean, there's treasure probably all over the place. That was, wasn't it from the Mayans or Aztecs or?
Mainly the Aztecs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
a lot of it's like on government land, and you just can't. I mean, there's places that are suspiciously marked, like they know where it is, and you just can't go and like just start digging out. It's probably watched. You know, it's not something.
Yeah, you know, they made literally finding anywhere on Bureau of Land Management land, it's illegal to find a treasure trove. You know, you can take a metal detector out there and a shovel if you want, but if you find something, you've broken the law. And that's, of course, because they don't want you finding the bones of giants, and, you know, and the kind of stuff that disproves the historical storyline. Any other questions?
I had a quick question. Do we need any music for the website, like background music?
For the Super Beams?
Yeah.
It's there?
I was thinking like I play my guitar, I'm always making these riffs, trying to come up with something to do with it, you know.
Disco, please.
Oh, what if you wanted to, like, you know, there's like a creativity thread if you want to share your creations. So that, you know, cool. Upload your videos or.
I'll come up with some. I'll put something up there.
Yeah, we're all about people.
Let's hear it, bro.
Creative. Yeah.
Well, I guess that's probably a good reason to bring it to a close, at least for me. So I think I'm going to hang up and get back to work. I am in the middle of a couple of projects, so I'm just going to keep doing it.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah, love you all.
Thank you all for coming. We'll do it again.
Awesome. Next week.